It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The journal Science recently published research findings on Alzheimer's done at the University of Pittsburgh. The research study addressed how a cancer drug improved brain function in mice with Alzheimer's. Joining us now to talk about the findings of this study is its senior author, Dr. Rada Koldamova. Dr. Koldamova, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Welcome to be here. Good to be here.
First, summarize your findings in this study and what it means for Alzheimer's research.
We used the mice that were genetically designed to express human genes because the mice naturally don't have Alzheimer's disease. So our mice were designed to produce amyloid beta, which is the building block of amyloid plaques, and the agent which is considered to be dangerous for the memory. And the mice were also designed to express human apolipoprotein E forms, one of which increases the risk of Alzheimer's disease. So we have been studying similar drugs for a long time when we saw this publication, and we decided to test it on our mice to see how this particular mice expressing either isoform, either form APOE will react on the drug. Because it's very essential that it's very questionable that the therapies that are designed or worked at present could affect people expressing these different apolipoprotein genes. Some scientists or clinicians have wonder if the drugs will be as effective on people having one of the isoform compared to other.
So here are the mice, and I was reading about the experiment. They had them in a pool of water, mm-hmm. and so explain how this worked. You gave some of the mice this drug, mm-hmm. this cancer drug, mm-hmm. and they were able to do in this comparative study the mice that were given the drug were doing what as opposed to the mice that were not given the drug.
Okay, so the test actually compares the if mice don't like to swim. So when we put them in a pool of water, they prefer to escape. There is platform that they can escape on, and there are some visual cues around the pool which they can recognize in order to find the platform. So the mice who on the drug learn faster than the other mice to find the platform and escape from the water.
So they would find a way out of the water,
yes,
faster than the mice,
yes,
not given,
yes,
the drug. Do researchers have any idea why this cancer drug improved brain function in mice?
There are several explanations, and the prevailing explanation is that the drug increases the level of this apolipoprotein E, which helps the amyloid beta, this dangerous substance, to be cleared out of the brain. And I mentioned in my talks with Marcus that this amyloid can be free-floating in the brain or can deposit in plaques that are immobile. So the original study published that the drug clears the plaques as well this free-floating amyloid beta. And that is the controversy, which probably you'll ask me next.
Right. Yes. We will get into that aspect of the,
yes,
discussion. But I think what's important to discuss at this point is the fact that doctors apparently are not in agreement as to what causes Alzheimer's. So there's this aspect of the brain. There's a problem that this drug helps to resolve, mm-hmm. but we may not know, or you may not know, that whether this is actually the cause of Alzheimer's.
Yes.
So what do we know about what causes it? Where does the debate center at this point about what causes Alzheimer's?
Okay, so there are two major group of scientists. One the prevailing, actually, the majority believe that this amyloid beta causes the disease. And there is another group that thinks that other mechanisms, one of which is accumulation of intracellular proteins, could cause the disease. So there is disagreement on these major two major topics on one side, and there is also disagreement between the scientists who believe that the amyloid is the most dangerous. One say the plaques are danger, and the other group, also the majority, say this free-floating A-beta is more dangerous.
So
it's complicated.
Yes. two schools of thought about the cause, and doctors are not in agreement as to what causes Alzheimer's.
Yes.
I understand that doctors have tried this drug on humans. They're not supposed to, but apparently they have. You have knowledge that they have already done it. They've already tested it on humans. What can you tell us about this?
So number one, it's FDA approved, drug administration approved
it
for cancer.
FDA.
For cancer,
right,
treatment.
Okay.
Yes. It is approved for cancer patients, some specific group of skin cancer. However, I heard, somebody told me, I haven't read the report, but I heard that the doctors prescribe the drug off-label for Alzheimer patients, which absolutely cannot be done. It's unethical, and I do not advise doctors to prescribe this before the clinical trials that are designed, monitored, come with some conclusion.
Right, because there are possible side effects. Do we know what those side effects might be?
Yes, the side effects are very well known, very well described in FDA files. They increase lipids, some class of lipids in plasma, in blood. And because they are very well known, doctors usually monitor the blood of these patients that are under treatment, and when the lipids exceed certain level, they prescribe anti-lipidic drugs, which this means that the side effects can easily be controlled. But as I said, no prescription off-label.
Right. This is, again, not something that you said it's unethical. You would not advise doctors to do it. Apparently, though, they're doing it anyway. So what have you heard about any type of result, any concrete results?
No. No, there is only one small clinical trial going on. I am told that it's done in St. Louis. And it's a small group of normal patients. And the design of the study is just to test the level, how the drug influences this free-floating A-beta level, amyloid beta level in humans.
Is there a willingness, to the best of your knowledge, is there a willingness among caregivers,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to get more into this discussion mm-hmm. Later on in the program, but is there a willingness of caregivers to accept the risks simply to try to find something that will mitigate the effects of Alzheimer's?
Yes, I heard from Dr. Landreth, who was the senior author of the original publication, that he got so many calls for Bexarotene for people willing themselves or their caregivers to enroll in the possible future clinical trial. So I'm sure that there are a lot of people who would like to try things that improve memory specifically, because they are not concerned about amyloid beta level. They don't know about this. They are, of course, concerned about memory, and sometimes it's really devastating, and they're ready to do anything.
We're talking with Dr. Rada Koldimova. She is a senior author of a research study done at the University of Pittsburgh on Alzheimer's. The findings from the study recently published in the journal Science indicating that there is a cancer drug that has at least improved brain function in mice. Whether it works on humans, we don't know yet, but that is certainly the key question, something we're trying to find out. Dr. Koldimova joining us here in Studio A. And there were also studies in the issue of Science questioning this drug, saying it may not work as originally claimed. I'm guessing you're aware of this.
Yes.
What about these contrarian points of view on whether this drug actually does work?
So because the original findings were very exciting, there are a lot of people, a lot of scientists trying to reproduce the results. And these other groups tested the drug on their mouse models. And they actually try only the effect on amyloid plaques. Only one of this group also tested the memory, effect on memory, and they found that the memory is improved. These other groups believe that the negative finding on plaques on their side should be sufficient to point out that the effect may not be what we expect.
But you did, you know, your study was pretty extensive.
Yes.
You engaged in an experiment with these mice. You did a comparative study with what looked to be very concrete results. What did they do, or what did the people who are refuting your findings do to discredit or come up with a different result?
They actually did the same experiments regarding plaques as we did, and I believe that they. So I mentioned the controversy in general between Alzheimer's scientists, that some believe that the plaques are important, some don't. So these scientists, they believe that the plaques are what causes the memory deficits. And in their logic, disproving this fact is sufficient to suggest that the result won't be positive or beneficial. That, I think, is their thought. I actually haven't talked with any of them, and I don't know what they personally believe.
But you obviously don't. You obviously do not agree with them.
No, I don't, because we always test drugs or effects first on memory, and if we don't find effect on memory, we are not so much interested to follow up. Our major goal is to improve the cognition of the mice, and hopefully. In people. So after we find effect on memory, we are willing to look for what causes this. So in this case, we are continuing actually our search because it might be some other mechanism which we haven't discovered so far.
All right. Well, coming up, we will continue our discussion of research on Alzheimer's with Radha Koldimova, and we'll look at the latest developments in treating Alzheimer's. We'd like to hear from you. If you were a caregiver or someone with Alzheimer's, would you try experimental treatment? You can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. You can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're discussing the latest news in treating Alzheimer's with Dr. Radha Koldimova. Joining the conversation now is Dr. Jennifer Lingler of the University of Pittsburgh, who sits on the board of the Alzheimer's Association of Greater Pennsylvania. Dr. Lingler, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul.
To join the conversation, call 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. You can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. If you were a caregiver or someone with Alzheimer's, would you try experimental treatment? Are you now a caregiver of someone with Alzheimer's? Would you be open to involving your loved one in experimental research? Call us at 412-246-2002. We would like to hear from you. Before we get to Dr. Lingler and some callers, Dr. Koldimova, I wanted to pick up where we left off just before the break, talking about Alzheimer's research. While the findings of the study that you did are encouraging, This is by no means a cure for the disease. Do you think a cure for Alzheimer's is possible?
Yes, I believe that cure is possible, and maybe it will come pretty soon. There are several promising clinical trials going on, mostly with this anti-A-beta vaccination, which seem to be promising.
In addition to the studies done with this cancer drug, mm-hmm. what other research to treat Alzheimer's are you aware of?
Well, there is no treatment, anything, some symptomatic treatments for cholinesterase inhibitors and memantine and some drugs that actually are designed to help the symptoms, but they are not too efficient.
412-246-2002 is the number to call if you'd like to get in on the conversation. We have Jim in Oakland.
Hello, Paul. Yeah, now, my mother has Alzheimer's disease, and my sister and I take care of her. Now, I know my sister read about this drug also, and we would not try it on her until we really find out more about it to see if it's really absolutely safe or not, even though she's progressing. We would not try it, and I know I wouldn't want to try it yet until we find out more about it, you know.
Well, and that's certainly a very reasonable...
And my sister's a nurse, so she really knows. She read up on it, and she doesn't feel that it's worth the risk of the side effects yet. So we really find out about it more.
And that's certainly a very understandable reaction to this. Certainly, in our conversation with Dr. Koldimova, she mentioned that there are a number of people who are so desperate to try anything at this point that that they are willing to accept those risks and go ahead and answer positively to the question that we put out there. And Dr. Lingler, we, as you just heard, tossed out that question to our listeners who are caregivers of someone with Alzheimer's about whether they would try experimental treatment. Are the folks that you've spoken to open to it? Are open to accepting the risks?
I have not spoken to any caregivers since the release of Dr. Koldimova's findings. So I can't speak to this agent in particular. However, interacting with Alzheimer's caregivers over the period of years, I can say that there's certainly variation. Now, at the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at the University of Pittsburgh, we tend to see those caregivers who are most highly motivated to involve their loved ones in clinical research. That being said, certainly there's a wide spectrum of opinion on that matter.
And I would also throw out the question to our listeners, what would it take for you to accept experimental treatment for a loved one? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Dr. Lingler, what is the Alzheimer's Association's reaction to the Pitt confirmation regarding the cancer drug study and what we've been talking about with Dr. Koldimova?
Well, if there's one thing that dealing with individuals with Alzheimer's disease teaches you, it's to live in the moment. And the vision of the Alzheimer's Association is a world without Alzheimer's disease. So any step toward realizing that vision is a small victory. Sitting on the board for the Pennsylvania chapter of the association, I can tell you that that victory really manifests in two ways, neither of which is the premature expectation that treatments for Alzheimer's disease are going to radically improve in the very near future or even perhaps in the lifetimes of individuals who are currently affected. But rather, the victory is felt in a different way. Many of my fellow board members on the Alzheimer's Association have a deeply personal connection to this disease in that they have family members who are affected by it. And that sense of powerlessness that comes with having a loved one be diagnosed with an incurable degenerative condition, it's that sense of powerlessness that led many of my fellow board members to question, what could they do? What could they do to somehow have an impact? And it was through that question that they found their way to board membership. And so this victory is somewhat sweet, this discovery, because Dr. Koldimova's research was funded in part by the Alzheimer's Association. So that's immensely gratifying to board members and staff who work so tirelessly to raise funds for this disease. The other aspect through which this is a victory, at least perceived as a victory by members of the Alzheimer's community, is that this research points to the possibility that the answer to Alzheimer's could come from an unexpected source, a cancer drug, of all things. So the power of that hope to motivate, to energize those who are working in this field, either as professional or non-professional caregivers or advocates for the disease, just cannot be underestimated.
412-246-2002 is our number. Let's go to Kathleen in McKeesport. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh, Kathleen.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have been working as an activities director at an Alzheimer's dementia facility, and I found that people with Alzheimer's disease dementia are most assisted by doing things that they're used to doing. One person in particular, his daughter said that he liked to sort nails. So she said, if you could get me a can of screws and nails and let him sort that, that would be very, very beneficial for him, because doing something close to what they did in the past. These facilities don't provide any environments close to what they've done in the past, and so people wander around there aimlessly with not knowing what to do. We have these walkers that they walk all the time. They walk constantly. There are people with all different stages of Alzheimer's disease. There is a product called Brain Boost. It's put out by Nutritional Frontiers, and Dr. Weiner Wellness Center over there in Greentree sold me this product. And this is they take three capsules a day, and it's supposed to help your brain. I've been taking one a day, and I feel great. Nothing wrong with me. And I think that the doctor Radikova is correct in saying yes, there is a cure.
Well, what about what Kathleen is sharing with us, Dr. Koldimova? She mentioned the Brain Boost. Does this work? Does this have any impact on it? You're shaking your head no.
I don't believe that there is proof of this in patients that are already afflicted by Alzheimer's disease. I believe that people who constantly exercise their mind throughout life, they definitely are less predisposed to have Alzheimer's disease.
When you say exercising your brain, what sorts specifically, what could somebody do that would maybe possibly prevent them from the onset of Alzheimer's?
Well, I cannot say this for certain, but there are studies that people with higher education or doing some working jobs that are more engaged with thinking are less afflicted by the disease.
So you're saying that someone who puts in a lifetime of manual labor might be more susceptible to Alzheimer's.
And might benefit doing more reading or some puzzles than watching TV. And also physical activity definitely is one thing that was proven to be very beneficial for mice. And there is suggestion that it could be beneficial for humans too. So I would suggest exercising or at least walking. But for patients, Kathleen is right, because they should feel comfortable doing whatever pleases them, whatever activity they are used to, and they should not be challenged to do puzzles or play some games that make them angry that they cannot find answers. So they definitely should not be challenged to do things that they cannot at present.
Kathleen, if you're still there.
Crossword puzzles, Sudoku. I did floral design with the residents. Tactile skills, anything that tactile. We sit around and read the newspaper every morning, then we discuss what's in the newspaper. You know, we get them to think in the current time, not in the past. In current day, and that has been very, very helpful with these people. They remember. I mean, one man in particular, he plays cards all the time. He teaches other people to play cards. He will be in his room shuffling cards all evening long. But that is the nature of what keeps his brain going.
Well, and this goes along, Kathleen, with what Dr. Lingler is saying, that it's about living in the moment. You had said that earlier.
Right, right. And certainly quality of life becomes key. And so to the extent that these sorts of activities can be tailored to provide pleasurable experiences, even in that momentary sense, for individuals who are suffering with this disease, certainly hats off to you, Kathleen, for facilitating that for so many individuals.
Dr. Lingler, what are the biggest challenges caregivers are facing?
Family caregivers face a wide variety of challenges. Now, before highlighting a couple of examples, it should be said that providing care for an individual with Alzheimer's disease is not an entirely negative experience all of the time for all people. There's certainly been some work done on the positive and rewarding aspects of caring for a loved one, and that's work that certainly is deserving of more attention. However, over half of caregivers surveyed report experiencing financial strain associated with their caregiving responsibilities. We know that family caregivers are estimated to provide care to loved ones that's valued at over $200 million. This is American Family Caregivers on an annual basis. And certainly when those caregivers seek out professional support, whether it's through adult daycare programs or through residential care when their loved ones become severely impaired, those costs are largely out of pocket and easily range in the realm of thousands of dollars per month. So financial strain is one aspect of the challenge. Yes.
Does the Alzheimer's Association provide care for the caregivers?
The Pennsylvania chapter provides support for caregivers in a couple of ways. So one thing that certainly should be mentioned is the hotline. So 1-800-272-3900 is the hotline for the Alzheimer's Association, which answers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and can make all the difference for a distressed caregiver at 3 o'clock in the morning. A knowledgeable, supportive human being answers by the second ring. The other thing the Pennsylvania chapter of the association does is provides training and infrastructure for caregiver support groups. These support groups, there are hundreds within the state. At www.alz.org, information can be
and we'll
found.
We'll put a link to all of the you are giving a wealth of information here, phone numbers and web address and everything. What we normally do and what we will do is provide a link to all of what you're giving us, Dr. Lingler, at our website, wesa.fm. That way, one convenient address for folks to go to get all of this very important information. It sounds like there's a lot of support, more than some of these caregivers may realize.
Absolutely. And it's in providing the value of providing this support cannot be underestimated. So I mentioned, you asked about challenges, the financial drain. Emotional strain is something that is reported by well over half. Recent estimates at 61% of family caregivers report experiencing emotional strain. And those caregivers who report emotional strain are the caregivers who are most susceptible to negative physical health outcomes and mental health outcomes as a result of caregiving. So to the extent that we can provide support to family caregivers is quite important and valuable.
Has there been any hope on the treatment end, as far as you're concerned? We mentioned some of the research, obviously, that's going on at Pitt that Dr. Koldimova is involved with. What are the other things that you're finding are encouraging?
Well, as Dr. Koldimova suggested, recent treatment trials, industry-sponsored trials, have focused largely on immunotherapies as a new direction in Alzheimer's treatment, which is radically different from the current symptomatic therapies that are currently approved. These are agents that could potentially alter the underlying disease pathology, which would be revolutionary if any of these actually came to market. Unfortunately, reports of trials within the past year or so from Eli Lilly, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson, and most recently Baxter, have been largely disappointing. Although if one looks past the headlines, as I mentioned, those of us in the Alzheimer's community are quite a hopeful group. So if one looks past the headlines, there is suggestion that some of these agents may be beneficial to subgroups of patients, and certainly research is continuing in that direction.
412-246-2002 is the number to call. We are asking the question, what would it take for you to accept experimental treatment for a loved one? Or if you would simply like to share your experiences with us, 412-246-2002. Our guests, once again, Dr. Radha Koldamova, senior author of a study at Pitt, which has shown that there is a cancer drug with the ability to possibly improve brain function in mice with symptoms of the disease. Also with us, Dr. Jennifer Lingler of the University of Pittsburgh, who sits on the board of the Alzheimer's Association of Greater Pennsylvania. Let's go to the phones again and welcome in Corrine from Squirrel Hill. Corrine, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that my stepmother has Alzheimer's, and it's really like a living hell. And I think that Alzheimer's is different from other diseases in the sense that if there's a drug that shows promise, I think many, I mean, I know certainly I would be willing to approve my stepmother's taking it, even if the risk is death, because death would be in some ways a blessing. It would be totally worth the risk if this drug could help her regain her memory. It's heartbreaking. I visit her in the nursing home, and it's heartbreaking to see, and it's the same for everybody. You know, I can understand why drugs have to go through clinical trials when their side effects might be worse than the cure that they, or the, you know, treatment that they're hoping to have, you know, to gain, but in this case, in the case of Alzheimer's, what could be worse, really? I mean, nothing. So, I mean, maybe in the case where it's not so advanced, but once it's advanced, I think I'd be willing to try it. I think most people would be really willing to try anything.
Well, we appreciate your sharing that, Corrine. And Dr. Koldamova or Dr. Lingler, either of you, how many people have you talked to who have expressed the desperation that we're obviously hearing from Corrine here?
My mother had Alzheimer's disease, so I can tell you from my own experience, she died recently, that I would be willing, because on the top of her memory decline, she had some psychotic episodes and was really very angry all the time. She went to daycare center for such patients, and almost everybody I talk with, they would be willing to try anything. I agree with Corrine. Death in such cases, salvation, because the life with loved one who is not the same as was before is horrible.
So for you and for your research, in addition to the professional motivation, there is a personal,
yes,
very personal connection,
yes,
and certainly we are very sorry to hear about
Thank
your mother.
You.
Dr. Lingler, what type of activism and advocacy are you seeing in the Alzheimer's community?
Well, there's a tremendous push to raise funds. There's a growing sense that Alzheimer's research is underfunded, and so there's been advocacy in terms of pushing forward legislation. So the National Alzheimer's Project Act was recently passed. There's advocacy in terms of just raising awareness and heightening awareness within the general community. As you heard from this description from Corrine of what a devastating disease this can be, that image issue that Alzheimer's disease has can actually deter some individuals with early symptoms and early evidence of memory impairment from seeking out an evaluation. And the prevailing thought is that going forward, that's going to be quite detrimental and quite an impediment to preventing this disease or arresting it in its tracks. Because if a treatment for early stage or even pre-symptomatic individuals were to come available, that begs the question, who would want to know that they were destined to get the disease? Or if expressing early symptoms, who would be brave enough to seek out an evaluation? So there's a lot of work to be done on the advocacy front.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. And let's go to Rachel. Well, apparently we just lost Rachel in Bridgeville, who had a question. 412-246-2002 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation or if you have a question for either of our guests, two very knowledgeable people from the University of Pittsburgh, Dr. Jennifer Lingler and also Dr. Radha Koldamova, who are with us to talk about research and to talk about the support and the information that is available for people who are dealing with or involved in caregiving for someone who has Alzheimer's. If listeners know of someone with the disease, Dr. Lingler, how can they get involved?
There are a couple of ways. So as you mentioned, wearing two hats, I'm with the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at Pitt, and the ADRC is on an ongoing basis looking for older volunteers with and without mild memory problems to participate in research. We have brain imaging studies. There's currently a study recruiting individuals who are experiencing behavioral or agitation symptoms, looking at an investigational drug for that. There's also a caregiving study that's recruiting right now in partnership with investigators from Carnegie Mellon University. Folks from Pitt are looking at new technologies that may help caregivers in the home. So certainly the ADRC would be a source of or resource for folks who may want to get involved in research. And then also the Alzheimer's Association is always looking for volunteers, be it for fundraising or for other activities. So again, I know that you'll make that those contacts available for folks.
Absolutely. They go to our website at wesa.fm. We're just about out of time for this segment, but I wanted to, before we wrap up, Dr. Lingler, for people who have questions about this, briefly explain the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's.
Okay. So dementia is an umbrella term. It's a general term that means mental deterioration. It can be caused by a number of conditions, and it so happens that Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of dementia. So Alzheimer's...
The things that were once commonly referred to as senility.
Correct. Correct. Yes. So if someone has Alzheimer's, by definition, they have dementia. If they have dementia, it may or may not be due to Alzheimer's.
So that would be the most severe form of the umbrella in the category of dementia.
I don't think that's quite accurate.
Okay.
No. So other dementias are unfortunately equally devastating in terms of quality of life and ultimate degeneration of the brain and impact. So sadly, as diseases progress, the manifestations are equally devastating for other forms of dementia. For example, dementia that's caused by cerebrovascular disease, dementia caused by other conditions like frontotemporal dementia, dementia with Lewy bodies. There are a number of causes, and unfortunately, they're equally devastating and incurable.
Well, I appreciate your clarifying that, and both of you have been a wealth of information. We thank you so much for spending time with us here in Studio A, Dr. Jennifer Lingler and Dr. Radha Koldamova of the University of Pittsburgh. And, of course, Dr. Lingler also sits on the board of the Alzheimer's Association of Greater Pennsylvania. Again, thank you both for being with us here today on Essential Pittsburgh. And again, if there's any information that you would like to check out as a result of the conversation you've heard today on the program, you can go to our website at wesa.fm to find out more. Coming up, a look at what happens when Pittsburgh's innovators branch out to new territory. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.